Hello, this is Don, reading on Tuesday, October 17, and I'm going to be reading the commercial news today, the Danville and Vermilion County News. The first article we see on page 1 is titled, Alderman Discuss Voorhees Bridge Replacement. With the Voorhees Street Bridge Replacement Project looming, Ward 7 Alderman Lloyd Randall said a new business owner asked whether there can be any compensation from the city for potential loss of business. Danville Engineering and Urban Services Director David Schnelli and Mayor Scott Eisenhower said the city has never done that. Schnelli said, quote, "We've historically not done that. That's always a question that comes up with any project that involves a detour." Eisenhower said, "It's difficult to determine the impact from the project associated with the construction being done compared to other changes occurring. The earliest bridge replacement project would see a contract is with the state's January bid letting," according to Schnell. Alderman 6 John Schnell asked whether the project could be completed one lane at a time instead of closing the entire bridge. "The bridge replacement project will cause Voorhees Street to be closed east of Spring Hill Cemetery near Colette Street." Schnell said, quote, "It would be cost prohibitive and it's a brand new bridge that we're putting in. Up to about 10,000 vehicles can travel that roadway daily." The bridge widening replacement and construction engineering on Voorhees Street at Stony Creek near Colette Street had been programmed at a cost of $1.4 million. The city has received federal major bridge funds for the project. City Council members tonight will consider purchasing two pieces of right-of-way, about 50 square feet each, for a detour for the project to be done to do some corner improvements on Roger and May Streets. Schnelli said the city will replace the corners with asphalt and be doing to some curb and gutter work to help with drainage issues there. Those roads are heavily traveled now to avoid trains on Voorhees Street, and when the bridge is closed near the Danville Humane Society and Stoney's Restaurant, it will see more traffic. It will be one construction project, so if the project starts in the spring, it should be completed in the fall, he said. In other project updates, Schnell reported the Danville High School Shared Use Path project is almost complete. All the masonry is done, and they are waiting for fencing to come in and then asphalt. South Street has seen a little rain delay this week, with pavement and median work continuing. Ward 3 Alderman Sherry Pickering also asked about the East Main Street demolition of a former restaurant and bar building near and Cone Creek. Danville Public Works Director Ray Garcia said the city is starting the restoration and will put a cover on the storm structure with stone placed around it. The city also is looking to purchase the former Heatcraft property on Voorhees Street. The city has been working on a Cone Creek flood mitigation plan. Alderman also last week learned Danville Mass Transit officials are testing new software on the buses to make sure that the right stops are announced at the right locations. An electronics recycling event earlier this month saw close to 300 vehicles and almost 1,100 units, about 300 units less than what the city saw last year. That's the news from the Danville City Council for today. The next article is about the work to begin on the Riverfront Trail. And accompanying this article is a large front page color photograph of Danville Parks and Public Property Superintendent Steve Lane looking over a map on Monday. And the map in color is displayed on the table in front of Mr. Lane. It shows the boardwalk trail as part of riverfront plans west of the David S. Palmer Arena. The city received a grant to help with the construction of the boardwalk, according to the caption. The article goes on to say, "Riverfront trail work starts. Grant helps city fund first step in area's development." A Keep America Beautiful grant is assisting with a first trail in the riverfront area. Danville Parks and Public Property Superintendent Steve Lane, who is also involved with the Keep Vermilion County Beautiful, said KVCB received a $5,000 grant. "The $5,000 trail building grant was through Keep America's Beautiful," he said. "It was the only funded project this year in Illinois through this particular grant program." Lane said KVCB has received other grants for tree plantings. We're constructing a natural rustic trail at the river bottom in the floodplain, Lane said. Part of the trail will go through a swampy area where there's usually a lot of standing water. He went on to say we'll have a small section of the trail, like a boardwalk. He said approximately a 200-foot-long section of the half-mile trail. Lane said there will be trail markers and some of the funding is going for native plantings of small trees and shrubs near the boardwalk. The trail will be located down below the hill where the buildings were removed from the riverfront area along West Main Street. Lane said the trail will initially be by itself, but it will all connect together with other improvements as the riverfront is developed. He said there is the steep hill to walk down, or there is an old roadbed that goes down the hill near Memorial Bridge where the public will be able to access the boardwalk trail by walking down that. Officials have started purchasing lumber for the boardwalk trail. They have done some clearing for the trail and a few posts. Lane said a third of the posts are in the ground, adding that the trail would be completed before winter sets in. No other plans are moving forward yet on further riverfront development. Aldermen earlier this year approved a community development block grant spending plan that didn't earmark money for the riverfront development area as city officials had originally proposed. The Danville City Council in June 2016 adopted a Revisioning Danville's Downtown Riverfront Conceptual Plan. The Riverfront Plan, created by University of Illinois students, lists strategies of what the riverfront could be and has recommendations and phases, including paths and trails, overlooks, pedestrian bridges, and an amphitheater. The city could seek grants and donations, such as from foundations, for funding. The city has been clearing and cleaning up the property along the south side of Main Street, west of David S. Palmer Arena, for anticipated riverfront development. That concludes the article about developments underway and planned for the riverfront area. Here's a report about an upcoming event at the Beef House Dinner Theater. The headline for this article is, quote, "Trip to Bountiful has uplifting message." The topic is serious, but the message in The Trip to Bountiful is uplifting. You'll go away with a renewed vigor for life, said Artistic Director David Rudrow. It's a musical about living life to your full potential. The Beef House Dinner Theater will present the play at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Friday and Saturday, and October 27 and 28, and matinee shows at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Sunday, and October 28 and 29. For the evening shows, the doors open at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and for matinees, the doors open at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Woodrow describes the musical as, quote, favorite American play, and as a dramedy. It's funny but poignant, he said. The story revolves around Carrie Watts, played by Nancy Henderson, an aging woman living in a small apartment in Houston, Texas. She longs to return to Bountiful, her hometown on the Gulf Coast of Texas. Stealing her own Social Security check, she takes off by bus to journey home. She's guided along the way by some guardian angels on Earth. The cast also includes Nathan Henderson, Jenny Gleason, Katie Weston, Brad Pollard, Tim Kirby, Noah McCree, Elena Ali, Carter Hambley, and Madison Taylor. We all know someone like Carrie Watts, whether it's your own mother or grandmother, or perhaps you possess the same kind of boisterous spirit, said Woodruff. I believe you will enjoy spending an evening with this woman as much as I love spending Saturday evenings with my grandmother and her best friend, as they crocheted blankets, watched the Golden Girls, and drank wine coolers. Hambley, a senior at Danville's high school, is a stage manager and also has a small part as a ticket attendant. Hambley said it's a really great show, and that she wasn't familiar with it before he read it, the script. It's a show that's easy to connect to. There are so many different angles. It's a character-driven show, Hambley said, and part of the fun is getting to understand the characters. The show addresses a serious topic about aging and wanting to go home, he said, but it's lighthearted and has a hopeful message. You're not going to leave depressed, he said. The cast is led by veteran actor Henderson, who appeared in Steel Magnolias and as Daisy in Driving Miss Daisy, as well as numerous musical theater jobs. Woodrow said Henderson is perfect for the role, and Hambly also described her as amazing. Woodrow said, "I have wanted to direct Nancy in Bountiful for many years. I just had to wait until the right time. For me, this is a play about living life to its fullest potential, no matter what your age, and I know you will love Nancy as Carrie Watts as much as I do as you watch her face every obstacle along her way with the precociousness of a child and the wit and wisdom of a sage." All these are quotes from Mr. Woodrow. This production will weave numerous hymns into the story, including Blessed Assurance, I'll Fly Away, His Eye Is on the Sparrow. The songs will be performed live on stage by ensemble members and Beef House musicians. Hambly intends to pursue a career in entertainment and enjoys writing comedy. He took classes in writing and performing through School City this summer. The production is directed by David and Jennifer Woodrow. That concludes the article about the upcoming trip to Bountiful at the Beef House. But accompanying this article is a picture of two of the actors. Beef House dinner actress Katie Weston is portrayed in this picture, and she will be playing Thelma in the play. The other person is Nancy Henderson, portraying Carrie Watts, and they're seen rehearsing a scene on a bus in the trip to Bountiful, and we're reminded in this caption that the play opens this weekend. Oh, here's a note about making arrangements for the play. Reservations for the trip to Bountiful are $45 per person and include the show, buffet dinner, beverage, salad, dessert, and again the show. For reservations, you can go online to beefhouserolls.com or you can call 765-793-4770. Here's a report about a shooting in Danville. Chicago man shot and killed in Danville. A shooting in the early hours Saturday morning has left one man dead, according to Danville Police and Champaign County Coroner Dwayne E. Northrup. Gerald Taylor, age 25, of Chicago, was pronounced dead at 4:29 a.m. Saturday while being treated at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. An autopsy was performed Saturday, and preliminary results confirmed Taylor died from the gunshot wound. The death is being investigated as a homicide by the Champaign County Coroner's Office and the Danville Police Department. Director of Public Safety Larry Thomason said police received a call shortly before 3 a.m. in the 900 block of Campbell Lane with a report that a person had been shot. The police blotter shows there was a report made of aggravated battery with a firearm at the intersection of Clyman and Lewis Lanes, which is near Campbell. Thomason said in a release that officers arriving at the scene found a 25-year-old male on the ground and immediately called for medical assistance. The man was taken to a Champaign area hospital by Arrow Ambulance, where he was reportedly died during surgery. Danville police detectives continue to investigate the incident and ask anyone with information to contact them at 431-2250. No other information was available at this time. A celebration of life service will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday, October 18, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Rod Godley will officiate. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, October 17, at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the Danville Public School Foundation, 516 North Jackson Street, Danville, zip 61832. Tributes can be made to the www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. The next obituary is for Robert R. Williams, age 91, of Georgetown. who passed away at 12:30 a.m. October 12, 2017 at Pleasant Meadows Senior Living in Chrisman. A visitation will be 10 a.m. to noon Friday, October 20 at Sunset's Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, 200 East West Street, Georgetown, with funeral service to follow at noon. Burial will be at Forest Park Cemetery, Georgetown. Memorial donations may be given in his name to the American Legion Dornblaser Post 203 Honor Guard. And you may share memories with his family through www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. The next obituary is for Clyde Theodore Darnell, age 83, of Danville, who died at 9 a.m. Monday, October 9, 2017, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of life will commence at noon, Friday, October 20, at Life Church, 2105 North Bowman Avenue, Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. until the start of the service. A public viewing will be 1 to 5 p.m. Thursday, October 19, at Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. Officiating will be Pastor Doug Knapp, and interment will be at the Danville National Cemetery. Condolences can be sent to www.leekandsonsfuneralhome.com. An obituary for Virginia Joanne Fisher, age 66, of Danville, who passed away October 13, 2017, at Presence United Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of Joanne's life will be at 2 p.m. Wednesday, October 18, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion in Danville, with Pastor James Blue officiating. Visitation will be 1 to 2 p.m. Wednesday prior to the service. Entombment will be at Sunset Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that you donate to Penny Boren, that's B-O-R-E-N, Penny Boren, care of Lohoff, L-A-U-H-O-F-F, Lohoff Employee Credit Union. And you may join Joanne's family in sharing photos and memories at www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. The next obituary is for Dolores Marie Freitick, age 79, of Georgetown, who passed away at 2:20 a.m. Friday, October 13, 2017, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Mass of Christian burial will be at 11 a.m. Friday, October 20, at St. Isaac Yogues Church, 109 West 7th Street, Georgetown. Burial will be at a later date in Georgetown Cemetery. Memorial donations may be made to the CARA in Tilton, a no-kill animal shelter. Sunset's Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, Georgetown, assisted the family with arrangements. You can join in sharing memories through the funeral home at www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. And another obituary, this one for Anthony Shaw. Anthony Isaiah, nicknamed T-Shaw, Senior, age 54, of Lafayette, Indiana, formerly of Danville, died at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Tuesday, October 10, 2017, at his Adams residence. A homegoing celebration will commence at noon, Thursday, October 19, at New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman, Danville. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. until the time of service. Minister Carl Shaw, eulogist, interment will be at Sandhill Memorial Park. A public viewing will be at 1 to 5 p.m. Wednesday, October 18, at Leek and Sons Funeral Home. Condolences may be sent to www.leekandsonsfuneralhome.com. Here is another obituary. for Andrew Andy Dean Harper, age 29, of Perrysville, Indiana, who died Saturday evening, October 14, 2017, at home. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Friday, October 20, at Shelby Funeral Home, Covington, Indiana, with burial in Mount Hope Cemetery. Visitation will be 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday. Memorials are requested to St. Jude Hospital with envelopes available. Condolences may be sent to the family at www.shelbyfuneralhome.com. That concludes the obituaries for today. And here we see an article about the state of Illinois trying to get a birthday party going for its 200th birthday. Illinois' 200th birthday party gets a late start. Illinois is on the brink of its bicentennial bash, but political skirmishing that has battered the state could be blamed for late party planning, a comparatively low budget, and ultimately its contribution to future generations. The plans to celebrate Illinois' December 3, 1818 admission to the Union seem to pale compared to the two states that joined just prior. Indiana and Mississippi spent tens of millions of dollars and have flashy legacy projects to show off. The Prairie State, just 7 weeks from kickoff of its year-long festivities, is aiming to raise a modest $4 million to $6 million. Stuart Lane, executive director of the Illinois Bicentennial, acknowledges planning got a belated start with his appointment just 1 year ago. While he said significant corporate and other donors are stepping up, he would not say how much has been raised. But he dismissed the idea that 2 years of infighting in the 21st state between Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, who appointed him, and Democrats who control the General Assembly over a budget that is millions in the red has hamstrung the project. He said he's taken two things from virtually every conversation he's had about the Illinois celebration. Here's his statement. People want us to use the bicentennial as a platform to change the conversation about the state of Illinois, to talk about all the great things that Illinois has contributed to society, Lane said in his speech in Springfield this month. The second thing is pride. People are proud to be from this state. That has become our mantra. There are plans for exhibits, a school curriculum, a United Center ceremony honoring 200 Illinoisans in the arts, entertainment, sports, agriculture, and business, and more. But it's hard not to notice what's been done elsewhere. Raising $55 million by leasing unused state-owned cell tower space, Indiana, which celebrated its bicentennial last December, built a state archives building, a state house lawn bicentennial plaza, a state library learning center, and an inn at a state park. It's nice to cut ribbons on grand projects to mark such events. Illinois did it when ground was broken for the $3 million centennial building, now the Michael J. Howell Building, on the state capitol grounds in 1918. But the key to Indiana's celebration was buy-in, said former U.S. Representative Lee Hamilton, a Democrat who chaired the state bicentennial committee with then-Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman, a Republican. Here's an article about the White House plan to cut business taxes to help families. By slashing corporate tax rates, the Trump administration said Monday the average U.S. household would gain an estimated $4,000 more a year. This stunning 5% increase was met with skepticism from tax experts and Democratic lawmakers who said the math was flawed. Spread across every U.S. household, the White House analysis claims it would generate, quote, conservatively, an income jump totaling $504 billion, or about $200 billion more than the revenues currently generated by the corporate income tax. With this new report, the White House is making a populist argument for its proposal to cut the 35% corporate tax rate to 20%. Trump has pitched his tax plan as supporting the middle class, even though the details point to major companies and the wealthy as the biggest winners. Polls suggest voters generally frown upon the idea of cutting taxes for business, essentially rewarding firms for avoiding taxes by exploiting loopholes and keeping profits overseas. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said, quote, President Trump claims about fake news, this fake math is as bad as any of the so-called fake news he has complained about. This deliberate manipulation of numbers and facts could lead to messing up the good economy the president inherited. The analysis by Kevin Hassell, chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisers, said that the considerably lower rate would spur more investment by companies, which would then boost hiring and worker productivity. The average income gains from the reduced rate could range from $4,000 to as high as $9,000, the administration said. These figures, however, rely on research arguing that workers, rather than investors, would primarily benefit from the lower tax rates. Separate studies, including a 2012 Treasury Department analysis, found the vast majority of any savings would go to investors, making it unlikely to push wages up as much as the administration has argued. The administration removed the 2012 analysis from the Treasury Department's website after releasing its tax framework plan last month with GOP congressional leaders. Outside economists said the income growth projected by Hassett appears to assume workers appear to bear more than 100% of the burden of U.S. corporate taxes, a mathematical impossibility. Jason Furman, Hassett's predecessor under President Barack Obama, said the numbers in the report suggest that workers bear about 250% of the costs. Mark Major, director of the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, called the income gains absurd. You'd have to have a tsunami of corporate capital coming into the United States, and we've never seen that, said Major. Stocks surged after Trump's election last year and the prospect of business tax cuts, but wage gains have been relatively tepid. The higher stock prices touted by Trump are a possible sign that investors would reap most of the benefits from lower corporate rates, although Hassett said he expects an increase in wages if the tax overhaul is passed. Here's some community briefs. Danville Quilters to meet. Vermilion Valley Quilters will meet at 9:30 a.m. today at the Danville Public Library Meeting Room. The program with Rose Walker will be constructing a quilt block on your machine. The public is invited. Coats giveaway will be from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday at Vermilion Heights Christian Church, 725 Oakwood Avenue. Free coats, hats, gloves, and scarves for children and adults will be given away. People must be present to try on and receive a coat. And the American Legion has listed its menu. American Legion Post 210 serves meals at 5 p.m. This week's menu includes spaghetti today, homemade meatloaf dinner on Wednesday, barbecue and wings on Thursday, with the Sapphire Band playing at 7 p.m., fish, chicken, tenderloins, and hamburgers on Friday, and pizza on Sunday. All are welcome. And here's a reunion schedule. The Danville High School Class of 1950 will meet for lunch at 1 p.m. Thursday at Jocko's Pizza Inn. RSVP to Joyce Nicholson Eichen, 446-2434, or call Maru Olas Nolan at 213-2618, or call Martha Miller Smith at 446-4155. Classes of 49 and 51 are welcome to join at this event. And here's a movie plan that the Danville Public Library's Kids Movie Club. Dracula enlists his friends to help him put his grandson through a monster in training boot camp. The movie begins at 1 p.m. Saturday in the first floor meeting room. Children ages 5-11 and children under 8 with a caregiver. That concludes my reading of the Danville Commercial News for Tuesday, October 17. I look forward to reading for you again at a future time. This is Don saying goodbye for now.